Om Shanti. So some of you may be wondering, who is this Brother Matthew that suddenly appeared on the stage? So am I, actually. It's a first. So I'll very quickly fill you in about actually who I am. For those of you who don't know me, I'm with Baba for the last 18 years. And I'm currently based at Oxford Retreat Centre. And I've actually been there since the beginning. I'm actually the oldest member there at this moment. So I've been there over 13 years. So I'm luckily, very luckily, great fortune for myself, surrendered my Brahmin life. Saying that, I've also had quite a full Lokic-like life. The age of this physical body is 56, so I've seen many things before my Gyan life. So hopefully I'll share some of those things also in my little exchange with you this morning. The title of this talk is Being a Balanced Brahmin. And first of all, I'd like to come clean and say that I'm not yet the embodiment of a balanced Brahmin. So please don't think just because somebody sits up here that they've cracked it. Not at all. This is an evolving path, as we all know, and a challenging path at times, and balance is absolutely essential. If I'm going too fast or anything, please give me the signal, Ramon. You know what I'm like, I start to accelerate after 10 minutes. So when I was thinking about the topic this morning, because it was a sort of last-minute.com type thing, one of the things that sprung to mind immediately in terms of balance is the tightrope walker. I think someone actually did a talk on that one year here. But I very much like the image of that. And I always remember seeing a tightrope walker walking across the Niagara Falls, and it was quite a dramatic experience, you know, to do that and see, you know, the falls below you and you're so high up, and to keep the balance, and it requires so many skills. And I was thinking, certainly in terms of our Brahmin life, many things are a comparison between our physical worldly life and obviously our internal spiritual path. And for me, the picture of the tightrope walker is very much keeping very clearly in front of me the destination, that it's the other side I'm trying to get to. And certainly as I start that walk across the tightrope, then it's really a matter of keeping my vision at the front and obviously keeping my balance. And there are many things in keeping my balance that I'd like to share with you this morning. But certainly in a physical sense, the balance and also the golden rule, never look down. You can imagine looking down and seeing what's below you, and it's suddenly realizing just what's there. So to keep the past behind you and to keep your destination in front of you. And I think that's been one of the greatest challenges of Brahmin life for me, and it's actually only in the last year that I've started to look at that from a different perspective. Because I think for all of us, our aim and objective is, of course, to reach our highest destination, which is for us personally. And on the way, we have many adventures. But equally, one of the things that sometimes appears to happen is that we become a little bit disillusioned or disheartened because the destination seems such a long way off, especially when we drop off the rope a few times and we have to clamber back on and start again. And that's happened to me on many occasions. So obviously the long-term goal, to keep the destination clearly in our vision, but equally to start to implement, and this is my experience over the last year, to start to implement small, achievable increments in my life. You know, Baba's always saying to us about laying down procedures, like if your remembrance is constant, at the moment, like you said in today's Merli, we can't be in constant remembrance. But by the very practice of regular yoga, when the time comes that it's absolutely necessary for us to remain stable in yoga, it will happen. And for this purpose, it's also necessary to start the procedure in all areas of our life, to start to implement Baba's ideas, maybe in increments that we can consume. You know, it's like in the Golden Age, we have a 36-course menu. And that takes quite a bit of digestion if you're eating that now. But certainly, if we start with one course and we start to digest that and work with that, then what we have is a stable base. And that means that we can create changes and transformation in our Brahmin life and create a balance by doing things that we can achieve. And, you know, it's a lot of the times where we're given very high ideals and ideas from the Murli, from the seniors, from those Brahmins around us that we have to emulate. Yet some of us find it a little difficult at times to implement those things. Yet we don't actually have to go for the full great big menu all in one gulp. We can start with small courses, with small helpings. Things that will start to work for us, things that we can achieve short term. Might be something very simple like, you know, I get up for Amrit Vela, or I go to Murli. That might be a start for some of us, or, you know, to start studying regularly, or whatever it takes. And then on the basis of that, what I find is that after a period of time, if I set myself these short-term targets, then I find that when it comes to it, then I'm able to build on that quite easily, because I've already got in place certain procedures that are beginning to work for me and to start to show me the fruits of those procedures. And I found this a very good and useful tool. As we become more content and balanced in our Brahmin life, then what we also find is that we are able to take on more in a sense of our own self-transformation. And again, there may be things that we want to do, that we'd like to achieve, that we'd like to sustain, that for some reason or another might be our old sanskars, our circumstances, or just where we are at any given point, not able to actually resolve those issues. And so when I am able to implement these small ideas and concepts, and I'm starting to get some power from that, then I can start to move into other areas. I can start to grow in my Brahmin life also. One of the things that I've always wanted to do is to throw out lots of stuff. Have you ever wanted to do that? You know, clear the cupboards out and get rid of things, just on a physical basis. And I've always been resisting it, thinking, oh yeah, I might wear that jumper one day, or, you know, I might use this, and I got all my Gyani stuff from 18 years piled up on top of my wardrobe, and I keep saying to myself, I'll do a book one day, or I'll take that down and I'll elaborate on that. And I thought, well, this year I thought, look, let's be honest here. Nothing's going to happen with that. We're moving forward fast. And nothing's changing in that sense. So I took a bold step and I eliminated approximately 80% of my possessions. And it was a very liberating experience. Because I suddenly felt and understood just how attached I am to different things, just on a physical level, and how they affect my stage spiritually also, because I have certain attachments and tendencies and leanings towards certain things, preferences. And so it was a wonderful experience to get rid of this stuff, and to suddenly feel that free from it. And while I was in Madhuban, earlier in the week, I was extending this train of thought a little further. And I suddenly realized that something like diet, you know, my diet, my physical diet is something that's very pulling also on the intellect. And how, again, I have preferences towards certain things. When we come to India, certainly from a Western diet, sometimes it's a little challenging for us, the diet here. It's not what we're used to. And many of us go down with body problems. And again, you know, it's all a matter of adapting and letting go and adjusting to circumstances. Yet if we have a rigid mindset about certain things and certain tendencies, then what happens, of course, is that we're not able to let go of them at the time of need when it is necessary for us to change. And so that was very interesting for me suddenly to think about that, because my diet is very different to the food that I eat here. And normally I would have piled into the chips, because that's my sort of sustenance while I'm in Madhuban. But I have a medical problem, I have gallbladder problem, and gallbladder stones don't like chips in the slightest. So I'm afraid I just had to renounce the chips. So automatically drama had contrived to force me to change direction again. And this is something also interesting in balancing out our Brahmin life, is that there are many signals coming to us at many times. We're getting signals constantly from our service companions, from our Lokic friends and relations, from the situations we find ourselves in, which are giving us those signals, are telling us things, and sometimes, and this is a word that I like recently, it's something I've sort of adopted, is being receptive to those signals. How do I feel about that? Not actually reacting to what I'm hearing, because sometimes we do react, because we don't want to accept that idea or that perspective. And so when I just accept it, what I do is I allow it to sit with me for a moment, and I allow myself to examine it and see if there's something valuable in it for me. Because a lot of the time we're getting many mixed messages, aren't we? Certainly from our companions on the journey, our fellow Brahmins, and we're trying to work out which ones are right. And of course we're aligning that with what we're hearing from Baba, and so it's always a juggle trying to get the balance. You know, we know what Baba says is right if we have that faith and that understanding, but you know, what about this? Should we be doing that? And what's going on over there is constantly looking at two sides. And real balance is, in actual fact, examining both sides, seeing both sides, and seeing what is valuable in both. Because ultimately, you know, we have to make our own decision. Baba's giving us signals, Baba's giving us teachings, and so are the seniors, and we're getting them from life. But if I'm experiencing pain in my life, and I don't acknowledge the signal, then there's definitely something wrong somewhere, and I have to acknowledge that also. And as we know, pain is a signal, and that's equally true in our spiritual life. If we're not leading a happy, fulfilled Brahmin life that's balanced, then there's something wrong somewhere, because as Baba's quite rightly pointed out on many occasions, the manifestation of a successful Brahmin life is happiness. If I'm not experiencing happiness, then I really have to look at myself and see what's going on. One of the things that I thought of this morning, which is really almost fused together with balance, is stability. When there's balance, there must be stability. And when there's stability, there's generally balance. Not in all cases, but in most cases. And I think one of the things that's certainly wonderful about a Brahmin life is when I start to gain some stability in my life. I've got that balance. I've been through the storms, I've dealt with issues. Not that the issues have disappeared, but they're still there, but I'm learning the skills and techniques that are enabling me to handle things more successfully. Certainly if I'm using Baba's knowledge and I'm implementing it in my life, then there will be some power there that help me. Maybe intellectually at first, but as I start to put those things into practice in my life, then I will actually start to gain some stability. There's also a little danger area here, because as we become stable, we can also become complacent. You know, oh, my Brahmin life's fine, you know. Everything's comfortable at the center, going just beautifully. We can sort of settle down, can't we, and just accept things as they are. But this is not what we're here to do, because we have to actually achieve a very high goal. And obviously, to do that, we have to increase our balance, but we also have to increase our effort, as Baba said in today's Murli. As we increase our effort, so also the challenges start to increase. As Baba said also, the more effort you make, the more Maya comes to you. And so Maya is another part of the agenda, in a sense. And balance isn't about balancing out Ravana and Rama, the vices and the virtues. You know, I've got my vices here and I'll dabble in them from time to time and pop over here for a little bit of spiritual sustenance. I think at the beginning maybe quite a bit of our journey is about that, because obviously we are still taking a great deal of support from the vices. There's a lot of, still some happiness there. I still take a little bit of happiness from my laptop computer, but you know what it's like, you know, we've still got these little things that we connect to and hold on to. And so it's a good scenario to run through our mind, well, what would happen if that was no longer in my life? For some reason it disappeared. The physical body, for example, You know, you might be a very serviceable soul, a very active soul. What happens if for some reason you become so sick that you can no longer do what you used to do? It's a good scenario to run through your head. Are you powerful enough in your consciousness to serve through your mind? Baba's often saying, you know, service through the mind, the balance of the heart and the head. And also that's something to take into account, because we just do not know what's going to happen at any given moment. One moment we're sailing along quite happily, and next minute a nice karmic account pops up and smacks us in the face. So we have to be ever ready. And when we've got balance and the ability to be flexible and adjust to situations, and then we can keep and maintain our balance and our stability with whatever circumstances come at us. And we're very fortunate because we already know what's going to happen. We've already got the program laid out ahead of us. It's not like we're in ignorance and we don't know what's going to occur. We know that within a very short period of time, and we can actually see now it is a short period of time, even though maybe 20 years ago they were saying destruction will happen next year and everyone's going, oh yeah, yeah, getting ready for it, and it never came. But in reality, looking at the world situation around us, you have to be an ostrich not to notice that things are changing very dramatically. A little strange bit of weather that we had here yesterday is an indication of certain things occurring, and these things are becoming more and more in our lives. So the messages are quite clearly there for us on a physical level. And in order to reach our goal and to play our role, we have to be prepared. And to be prepared, we have to start to implement and start to proceed, putting into place the things that Baba's asking us to do. Equally, it's like in the balance in Brahmin life, and my life as a Brahmin has been challenging. It's been very rewarding. I think one of the things personally that I take a lot of benefit from, something that I find very useful for myself in Brahmin life, in fact absolutely essential to create a balance, to create a sense of progress, is to be creative. I'm actually a fairly creative person. I've got wonderful specialities that Baba's given me, and to implement those things means that I'm actually using my creative skills, or developing my creative skills, to actually create all the things that I want to experience in my Brahmin life, not anywhere else. You know, the skills that I learn and the powers that I take and the beauty that I take from Brahmin life is then shared. That's something different. But if I'm actually taking from anything other than my Brahmin existence, then there's going to be a sense of impurity or no power or no sense of fulfillment in that. So when we're being creative, of course, it doesn't mean to say that we have to write a song or draw a picture, although those are beautiful expressions of my creativity. What we're talking about in terms of real creativity here, and probably the most exciting process of creativity, is the fact that I'm creating myself. I'm changing myself from one state to another. And this is a very exciting idea. I don't know if you've really thought about it. You know, at the moment I might be just sailing along and turning up for the class and writing down my notes and putting my shawl on and sitting in front of Baba and thinking, yeah, it's going to happen, yeah. Baba will give me a touching, or I hear something in the Murli. But the reality is I have to take the reins. I have to take the responsibility for drawing from the situations I find myself in something that's going to hold me, something that's going to excite me, something that's going to interest me, something that's going to give me some joy. I was sitting in meditation last night and there was somebody just about nodding off near me. And I was thinking, like, you know, the balance is absolutely essential in Brahmin life. I was sitting in a place, beautiful place, I'm actually based in Pandav Bhavan. I was in the history hall, which is steeped in yoga and Baba's history, just looking around at the pictures and everything. You get a real feel of the Agya. Is it Ishwar or Daddy Ishu? Daddy Ishu, Brahma Baba's Brahmari? Yes, is it Ishu, Daddy? She was sitting opposite me, below the picture of herself, sitting next to Brahma. And I thought that was spectacular, and I was just sort of thinking, you know, this soul was with Brahma. And she's here now in this room, and just to enjoy that moment. And it's special little gifts like this. And obviously the gifts that the daddies give us, we're very fortunate in Oxford that we see quite a bit of daddy, and daddy shares many things with us, and to get a feel of, you know, when I'm sitting in the class listening to Daddy Ratanmohini in the morning, and she goes off into the elaboration of the experiences of those early days of the Yagya, and it sort of brings the whole thing alive for you, and you suddenly start to get a real feeling of what this journey is about and what this family is about. So being creative is to allow my mind to really jump into Baba's world and to really let it loose, not to create any limitations. Limitations are constantly being created. I can't do this and I can't do that. But Baba's world is unlimited. And in a sense, there's another balance there. There's the balance in between my limitations and my sense of being unlimited. And what we tend to do, of course, it's all to do with scales, isn't it? And at any given time, I'm generally moving into one area and we're getting the tip again. So when I'm in the center, I've got perspective. When I'm being creative, I'm really feeling that my Brahmin life is something that is really meaningful and worthwhile all the time. And of course, that experience is then becomes my state of being, my dharma, and is expressed in my happiness and my joy being here with the family. So it's really important that we bring creativity in every moment of our life. It's very easy to do something, yes, we sort of move towards or gravitate towards, again out of balance, towards things that we have preferences towards. And this is an interesting concept also, you know, because where did preference come from? Preference is the beginning of my fall, my descent. At the end of the Silver Age, when I've started to lose power, my vision has started to externalize, and I started to see things or take a preference to things that are more interesting or more exciting or more drawing than the things that I already have, because I'm slightly empty. Preference then creates desires to have those things. And so this aspect of preference takes me into imbalance again, you know. Yeah, I'd love to do this bit of service for Baba, but don't really want to clean the toilets. And so it's a bit of a challenge, you know. And yet, in the early days of the Yagya, you saw how Brahma Baba broke the ego of the daddies and all the early souls by giving them menial tasks to do. To actually deal with those things and maintain their state of stability and balance and happiness within the different things that they were encouraged to develop and skills they were encouraged to develop within themselves. You've heard the classic stories of how they were given things to do that they'd never experienced before. They had no idea, and Baba said, "You do it, you do it." And so they went through all this. And experience is a wonderful thing. We all have our life experience. Our life experience gives us the perspective, because when I'm in the center, I'm seeing both sides. My life experience as a Lokic person, I've been married, I've had many relationships, I've had many jobs, I've done many things, I've been through many problems, gives me a whole wealth of experience on this side that I can quite clearly look at it and say, okay, that's enough of that for this cycle. This side is much more appealing. Because if it isn't, then that means that the balance is going to shift again, and I'm going to move back into that old world. And I think, oh, it wasn't so bad. You know, we used to have a drink and a party and a laugh and everything. And, you know, at the moment my Brahmin life is a bit dull, a bit boring, a bit sad, or whatever. And so we start to slip back again, and the balance goes out again. And this happens, and we have to be aware of this. I don't know if any of you, are any of you here for the first time, new Brahmins? Yeah, quite a few of you. Okay. When I first became a BK, it was quite a challenge. I remember quite clearly just coming into the centre and starting to look at it all and thinking, I don't know about this. It looks all right, but I don't know if I can follow all this stuff, especially when I heard about things like celibacy and not drinking and all that kind of stuff. I thought, oh no. But anyway, I ploughed on with it. But I remember in the early days, things like, for example, I was a foot in each camp. You know this saying? I've got a foot in both camps. I was sort of straddling two concepts, playing with one and living in the other. And I remember things like, you know, my friends at that time were pretty awful characters. We were heavily into drugs and drink, and sort of spent most of our time in the bar. And I thought, you know, this is really, we're going to make it some kind of decision here, because I can't maintain these two together. It just doesn't work. You may have been through that experience already. One has to go. So I weighed it up in my mind, and I thought, well, I really like what Baba's offering here, like the feel of it. And what really, I think, appealed to me really in the beginning was not so much the knowledge or anything else, but really a real feel of family. I really felt I'd come home. I really felt that I knew these souls. There's some energy there that was very attractive. Baba had sort of pulled me in very subtly with this beautiful energy, and I thought, I like it here. I like these people. They're my kind of people. I feel some affinity with them. And I was looking at my other friends and sort of thinking, I think it's time to say goodbye. And so I moved from one side to the other, and I said, okay guys, nice to see you, and I'm doing the meditation thing now, but I'm afraid I can't marry these two things up. I just had to be very honest about it. It just wasn't going to work. And they said, oh, what do you mean? You know, what are you going over there? What's all this? And everything. I said, well, I just can't live two lives like this. So I then started to move into Baba's world. And I think little by little it's a dismantling process. You know, it's like with my Lokic parents, they were a bit sort of concerned. It's not the word. They were sort of saying, is this right? Do you think this is okay? It's a bit sort of severe, isn't it? Can't you do something that's less severe than this? And I was saying, well, I feel this is right for me. And then when they found out about my diet and everything, they were a little bit shocked. You mean you're not going to eat our food? What's wrong with our food? Well, you know, you've always ate it before. And I said, well, it's not that, Mum. You know, your food's lovely, but, you know, we have principles. What do you mean principles? And I'm sure a lot of you have been through these scenarios. And so there's a constant balance, isn't there, between not hurting someone's feelings. And I was actually talking to somebody the other evening about this. And he's got to go and do service in another country, and all his Lokics are there, and they keep, you know, can't understand why he won't eat their food and everything, and they're very disturbed by that also. And it's very interesting. We've got to move through these scenes and find our balance in this situation. And so with my Lokics, it was little by little they accepted it. But I mean, there's also times when we have to give and take. I don't mean in things as powerful as diet, which I'll look at in a moment, but certainly in terms of our ability to adjust and adapt. You know, my father and mother used to sit there in front of the television with it blasting out, eating their meal, you know, like sort of going in. Nothing was registering, sort of glazed look on their face. And so I thought, well, I don't really want to do that. I'll go and eat in the dining room. And so I went and ate in the dining room out of the way. And then there was a sort of message came through, oh, well, you're not going to eat with us and all that. And they were really a little bit upset by the fact that I wasn't there joining them with the meal. And I thought, well, it's a small price to pay, actually. I'm getting my own food, and really just not to cause sorrow, just to see it through. And so I sat there with them and ate my meal with them. And it just brought a little bit of happiness, and it wasn't a problem. I just, in fact, it gave me the opportunity. And like everything in creating balance in our life, is an opportunity for us to see where we have to create some balance. Because are any of you pulled towards the television? Of course you're not. No? The television's on and you're looking over in the corner there. What's that? Oh no, I'm in yoga, aren't I? So, you know, it's like how many of you watch the movie on the plane coming over? Put your hands up, those who watch the movie on the plane. Quite a few. You know, you're a bit bored, aren't you? And it's flickering away there. I must admit, I watched the movie on the plane coming over. It was a great movie, actually. It was Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Werewolf. It was just so funny. But I don't normally watch movies. That's one of my disciplines, because I know the power of images. They just pull you in so much. I actually work with images in slideshows and things. So I know the power of the media. It just draws you in so easily. So in balancing out our Brahmin life, we have to be aware of many things that would pull us to another side. You know, our weaknesses, our vices, things that are going to just draw us away very subtly or very grossly in the wrong direction. And understand, the most important thing is not thinking, oh no, I must focus, oh, get back into the straitjacket, but to understand what is happening. This, for me, is one of the most important principles of a balanced Brahmin life. I must really realize what is going on, why it is important for me not to deal with this, not to have this in my life, not to bring it back into my life, to acknowledge it and see what it is, but to realize that it's a danger. Because if I don't, then I'm just going to, it's subtly going to encroach back into my awareness again. And I think, well, it's not that bad really, you know, okay, whoops, and we're gone again. And this really is a path of constant attention. Because the moment we become complacent, we'll slip off. Because one mistake, and we will make mistakes, that's part of our journey and part that we have to accept, but one mistake means we have to get back onto the path again and start to make the effort again to pull ourselves back up to where we were. I had this experience very early on in my Brahmin life. I was having big problems with purity, and I managed to really, you know, that really struggling with purity to bring it up to a really wonderful level, and then my purity went for some reason and I was absolutely devastated. You know, I think it was actually here in Madaban, it just one of those things that happened. And I was thinking about going home, and it was just before Baba's meeting. Baba was coming in Om Shanti Bhav, and it was many years ago, the beginning of my Brahmin life, and I thought, oh, this is it, my Brahmin life is wrecked. Because if you don't have purity in your Brahmin life, then really there is no life, as some of you may already know, or found out, or know already anyway. But it's certainly an essential ingredient of Brahmin life. And it's what happens when you lose your purity, of course, is that you lose your whole consciousness, your whole sense of elevated awareness, your sense of self-respect goes totally. Because that's why we have very little self-respect, because we've lost our purity. And so at that point I was thinking, well, my God, what am I going to do now? Can I go back to Lokic life? I was really running through all these scenarios in my head, and I was thinking, what choice is there? But Baba is beautiful and such a support, you know, and almost by magic, it was magic. It was almost as if he erased it totally from my consciousness during that night. And when I woke up again in the morning, it was almost as if nothing had happened. And that was the magic of Madaban, and just my honesty. And at that time, it was just really unbelievable. But what I did realize, and this is a very deep realization for me, and it's always stayed with me, that once we put a lot of energy into effort to creating that stage for ourselves and that stability, then the moment that we lose that, we will never ever achieve it again. We will come up to a parallel and we will surpass it, but we will never achieve that particular stage. Do you understand what I mean? Because it is the ingredients, it is the collection of many ingredients that have come together. Many things that are dynamics and energies that I brought together into my Brahmin life, my early experiences, just the way that I've assimilated, have created for myself an experience that is never repeatable in this cycle, because it's completely unique. And so, equally, it's not a process of comparison, because when I come up and I come to that level again, I look across and I see where I was, but I have to keep going, because now I have experience. And with experience, I know that I have to now move beyond that level. I used to do a lot of sport, and I went in for a lot of running, and I tried to do some half marathons. And I remember doing lots of build-ups, because, you know, Brahmin life is also about training, very much like a training. We're the premier players in this game. It is a game. We're going in for a game. Drama is a game, and if we look at it like this, we can see what's necessary for us to survive in the game. We're not the audience. We are participators. And there's a very big difference between being a participator and the audience. If I'm on the field, you know, nowadays footballers are some of the most highly paid individuals in the world. But in order for them to earn that money, they have to be absolutely the creme de creme. So they go through very rigid disciplines and trainings. Because, you know, footballers now are exchanged for millions of pounds or dollars or whatever. And so, you know, in the same way, we are the highest. And so our training is also the highest. And so we have to prepare ourselves for that training on all levels. In Brahmin life, the balance is are of mainly that I see it for myself, and this is just my perspective. Baba has many angles on balance, but it's certainly the balance between the four subjects. Excuse me a second. Obviously, yoga. One of the things that I made an early discipline for myself, because I experienced so much benefit from it, and I realized that it was an integral part of my own effort in moving forward, was Amrit Vela. I saw it as an essential ingredient in creating a basis for a strong Brahmin life. Now, balance in Amrit Vela means that I've got to get up, sit up, and be alert and attentive and receptive to Baba's vibrations. Otherwise, I'm just going to drop off to sleep. So if I've had a late night, or I've been working hard at the office, or, you know, I'm just generally tired at service, or been doing something in the centre all night, been sitting in front of a computer, or been arguing with the Lockicks, or, you know, something's been going on, then it's fairly guaranteed that my Amrit Vela won't be the best in the world. I'll most likely be nodding off, and I'll wake up a couple of times to hear the last song going. And this means that I won't be taking very much power. And if I don't have power, I won't change. So the balance, of course, of Amrit Vela is very clear. Go to bed early or get some rest. That's the message. It's not complicated. Yet how many times a Brahmin sitting up all night, or just this last job to do on the computer, but it's midnight, you should go to bed. Oh no, I'll finish in a minute, it's got to be out tomorrow. And then the Amrit Vela is finished. Interestingly, I had a nice experience here where, well, it wasn't a nice experience, but it was an interesting experience. When I moved up here to Pandavbhavan, where I decided to ensconce myself this year because I needed some extra yoga, one of the brothers in my room, who shall be nameless because this is all being recorded, was a little bit of a snorer. There's an understatement. It was a bit, you know, I could hear him out of the building. And he was there first, so I couldn't do anything about it. But I first moved in that night, and the other brothers in the room said, "Look, the brother over there, he's a mega snorer." And I said, "Oh, really?" It's my first night there. I thought, well, okay, what to do, you know? Can't tell him to stop. So, anyway, got into bed and lay down, and there was all silence at first, and then it started, and I thought, my God, he is a snorer, isn't he? That is horrendous. So I thought, well, what choices do I have here? I can move out of the room, or I can stay here and try to get some sleep. So I thought, well, if I move out of the room, everyone's gone to bed, where am I going to sleep? So I thought, well, I can try to sleep here. So I lay down, and it just went on all night, continuously, all night. I thought, how can anybody snore as much as that? And in the end, I was awake when the Amrit Vela, Amrit Vela, and I sort of lay down. And he got up, fresh as a daisy. Yeah, yippee, Amrit Vela's here. Leapt off into the shower, washing himself, and off he went to Amrit Vela. And I was lying there in bed, half dead, thinking, oh my God, this is my opportunity, I can go to sleep now. And suddenly I thought, no, can't do that, you know, because Amrit Vela is my discipline. So I dragged myself out, you know, propped up my eyelids with eyelashes and sort of crawled down to the history hall and sat down there and sat on the floor because there was no seats. My body was aching and I looked at the person who was conducting. And then all of a sudden, Bubba's power came through and suddenly my eyes opened up wide and I sat there like that for 45 minutes. And I just felt fantastic. And I went back to my room and studied the Merle and I thought, this is absolutely great. I couldn't believe it. But you know what I mean, it's just, in Madhuban we have the gifts like this, where Bubba's magic's here and the atmosphere's here and all kinds of wonderful things can happen for us. But of course in your Lokik situation, if you've got to get up for work the next day, and you've had a sleepless night, it's no fun, is it? So balance is essential, and certainly within that first part of my Brahmin day, to make sure that I precede my Amrit Vela with a good rest. You know, that I'm constantly aware of the needs of my physical self as well. That I need to rest my body. It's a tamopradan, run-down old costume. And, you know, it's like I'm running it into the ground all the time. You've got to take care of it. We've still got a few years to get through in this confluence age with this body, which I'll look at a little later also. So, then when I sit down for Amrit Vela, I'm then in a position to start to draw to myself and start to work with things that are going to become the foundation of my day. And preferably to go with some kind of idea or something that I'm going to play with within Amrit Vela, unless I want to sit there quietly and just absorb Bubba's rays, whatever. But again, to start to bring into my Brahmin life the creative process. What am I going to do with my Amrit Vela today? Am I just going to sit here and stare at the picture and hope that Bubba will leap out and give me an experience? Or am I going to actually start to instigate something? I'm going to start the process of communication myself, either talking to Bubba or drawing something or seeing something there or visualizing something, whatever, and bringing some newness in. This is why Bubba's constantly giving us this word newness. What am I going to do that's new this morning? I mean, if you're in the center and no one's in the room, lie down. But there's no problem, as long as you don't go to sleep. And then what you find is that you come out of Amrit Vela and you feel fresh. In the early days of my Brahmin life, I used to think, well, okay, I've got to go to work now. I'm feeling a bit tired now, so I'll drop off to sleep. But what I found from my experience, and this is my personal experience, was that the moment I went to sleep, I had the most horrendous dreams. My head was just awful, and I woke up from early, and I thought, oh my God, where am I? I felt absolutely shot away. And I thought, no, there's some message there. No sleep after Amrit Vela. That's obviously the message here. And so I ditched sleep after Amrit Vela and started to study. And what I found in that process was another interesting area of developing a balance in my Brahmin life, was that I was very, very receptive to Bubba's ideas, very open. The intellect was very open, and the ability to see things much more clearly at that time, having had that spiritual input, the clarity was there that allowed me to see things in a much better way than any other time during the day. And so I was started to study a bit more intensely at that period. And what I also did was that I started to develop certain study techniques that I found stimulating and exciting. So I started to look forward to those things. Because this is really important, that you won't do these things. A, you won't get up from Amrit Vela. B, you won't study, and C, you won't go to Merle, unless there's something that is drawing you, that's exciting, that's going to stimulate you when you do those things. If it's just a boring routine, then you're not going to sustain it. Which brings us on to the next aspect of this process, the sustenance. Balanced life is also about sustenance. I must sustain the processes that I create. Doesn't mean to say they don't change, because interestingly, what's going on in our whole lifestyle is constantly happening, is the Trimurti, is the creation, the destruction, creation, sustenance and destruction of everything. everything is going through that movement. And so at any given time I'm creating something, but then at another time I have to sustain something, and then at some point I have to let it go. And so if I'm aware of this, that this is there, and I implement that, and then I'm moving on all the time, and that newness has been created. You know, what I've done for myself personally, I've been studying the Merlis quite intensely for the last 5 years. I've got the last 5 year cycle of Merlis, and I'm drawing out all the points that I really like and churning them, and it's created a wonderful document. But it's that document is now finished because the 5 year cycle's finished, and I enjoyed it very much. It was very creative, very exciting, very stimulating. And now I'm going to go through the document from a different angle, where I'm actually going to start to, after my Amrit Veda, to start to churn those things and see what the implications of them, and really understand what Baba's saying and start to play with that in my life. So study at that time is a very rewarding experience. And then, of course, by the time you come to Merlis, you're already extremely receptive and open to the Merlis. And it's not just sitting there and listening to a load of stuff and it's sort of just washing over the top of your head, but you're actually enjoying every word and you're getting a feel of it, because it's very difficult for us to appreciate the beauty of the Merlis if it isn't our language. You know, I've heard Hindi people explaining the Merlis and how Baba says it in Hindi. And Baba speaks almost, as they say, it's a song, it's poetry. It has a sort of flow to it. When you're hearing it, of course, then it's translated into English, where there are sometimes no comparisons in translation for the feelings that Baba's trying to convey. And so you get lots of long sentences or short sentences or words that don't quite match what the original says. So in a sense, that's a challenge for us. It's certainly in the West. That means that we have to start to experience more the feeling of what Baba's saying. Try to get behind the words and also to improve our yoga at the same time. So it's a connection. So the balance is there is obviously when I'm listening to the Merlis, the balance is to be open and receptive to what I'm hearing. And that means that sometimes I will hear things that I don't like. You know, sometimes Baba will say something that I don't like that. I'm not like that, you know. He'll say, you're this, and you're saying, and there's a reaction, a response inside of me that's reacting against what I'm hearing. Or I might think, you know, Baba says, you're this golden age deity. And I think, no, I'm not. I'm not like that. I no hope of being like that. And it's these things, these triggers within the Merlis, that give us the opportunity to really look at ourselves and say, why am I responding in this way? Why am I reacting to this? They're the things that are actually essential for me to examine, because they're touching something inside that needs addressing. And this helps me to then balance out myself much more comfortably, where I'm starting to understand the things that do need addressing within my personality, within my sanskars. Because Baba's talking to all souls. But it's funny, isn't it? When he speaks to Merlis, you think he's sometimes talking to you. God, he knows me so well. He's saying, oh no, oh not again. I know Baba, I shouldn't do that. And we're living in this Bhakti mode, aren't we? Where we're beating ourselves from time to time. Give ourselves a good thrashing. It's a good Bhakti sanskar. Yet the balance is, of course, is to realize, I don't know if you're familiar with the Jekyll and Hyde. It's a two sort of very different characters within one personality. And this sort of Jekyll and Hyde personality within myself, the negative and the positive, fighting and grappling for control often. And little by little, hopefully, the positive, progressive and spiritual side of myself is starting to win this internal war. So when I've heard the Merlis, then it's great just listening to the Merlis, you know, but if I go out of the door and Baba says, don't be angry in the Merlis, and I start shouting at somebody at work, it's not exactly much use, is it? So it really is about turning it, the balance, turning it into my dana. Everything's about balance. Using the Merlis is not to use it as a weapon on my companions in my Brahmin life. Oh, that's what Baba said that in the Merlis, you shouldn't be doing that. You know, it's not that. But to actually turn them early inwards, using that mirror and saying, what is it that I need to address? Looking at myself here, I'm the one that has to do this, because whatever I see is my vision. It's not what you're doing or what's going on outside of myself, that is just my awareness. And so the Merli is my mirror, and I look at it and then I start to see what I have to do about it. What I like particularly about examining my weaknesses is that I look at them in a certain perspective. I don't look at them as my weaknesses, but I look at them as a sort of infection. You know, if I've got a cold or the flu, I don't say, oh, I'm a flu person. I'm always like, I've got the flu, I'm a flu person. You don't say that, do you? You say, I've got the flu and I want to get rid of it. You don't want to hang on to it. Does anybody want to hang on to their stomach problems while they're in Madaban or something? You want to stay here in Madaban with horrible stomach problems and feeling sick and flu? I don't think so. We want to get rid of those things. They're like an intrusion. They're a foreign body that's invaded us. And we're quite aware of what we have to do, you know. We have to take medicine, we have to deal with it in some way or another so that eventually it leaves, preferably as soon as possible. Yet it's funny, with our weaknesses, we sort of keep them there, don't we? Hide them here. Oh, you're not going to touch those. But it's equally the same vision. Understanding that these things are an infection, they're ruining my Brahmin life. Every time a vice comes into my consciousness, it ruins my Brahmin life, it ruins my happiness. So what am I going to do about it? I'm going to treat it. I can treat it when I'm not attached to it. Because Baba's saying, look, you've got this problem with you, you're not, he's giving us again the balance, look, you're this, you got this, but you're not that. So why do you keep thinking that you're that? That's got to go. And we're so resistant, aren't we, to let go of it. Yet it's like my example of letting go of my personal belongings in a physical sense. The mere letting go of things is liberation, is freedom. And I felt really liberated by that experience. So you imagine, as we liberate ourselves from those vices by seeing them and understanding them as an intruder, as something that I don't want. They just come as a game. It's only a game to play, to challenge me in the game. And I kick the ball back, as Baba said, in one Merli. You know, just enjoy. But don't allow them in. Because I don't want it. I've had it for all this time, and it's now finished. And so I start to get rid of it. But get rid of it with knowledge. This is balance. Don't get rid of it and go, oh no, I've got to get rid of it. Oh, it's such a struggle getting rid of this vice. Because what's happened is that I think that I am the vice. That's the problem. And so when I accept I'm not the vice, that it's an intrusion, that it's an infection, then it's easier for me just to resist it. It's not that it won't come, because things do come. And we have to be prepared for those things, but we have to move beyond them and through them. And just, you know, allow them to come, because, as Baba says, they'll come in a more and more stronger form, and that's how we become stronger. Because ultimately, let's look at the reality of the situation. The end scenes that Baba gives us, you know, can you imagine seeing the things that Baba's told us will happen? The carnage and things around us, our friends and relatives and what have you, people being destroyed around us. How body conscious are we still that we cannot be affected by that? And we have to go beyond those things and realize that we're just seeing physical costumes here. And of course, if I'm not implementing that concept already in my own consciousness, that means I'm still attached to my own physical body, then I stand very little chance of resisting the pulls that are going to happen when I see others' bodies being destroyed or something happening around me. So the Merli is essential in that sense, that it gives us all the ingredients that allow us to see everything, the whole picture. And that's a really important part of balance, seeing the whole picture. And one of the beautiful things is understanding the drama. So as I move up and I lose my stage or something happens, then I understand that, as Baba said today, is fixed in the drama. Not before. I have to make the effort. And this is sometimes a paradox for us, isn't it? Many paradoxes in Brahmin life. You know, how can it be a fixed drama, yet we have to make effort? And for me, I was quite interested, well, I still am very interested in the drama, but I did a study of it for many years. And for me, in a nutshell, it's like saying that, you know, I have to get up here and do this talk, because that's what I'm doing. I am talking and sharing some ideas with you. I'm making the effort to do that. I'm implementing it. I'm bringing it into action. So I've done it. I've made the choice. But it's already been done. Because last cycle I sat here also and gave this very same talk to you. Do you remember it? You do. Some of you do. And that's great. And I can go now then, because I wanted an early lunch. But so for me, I think, you know, the aspects of the spiritual life, the balance of the four subjects are absolutely essential. That my yoga is good, because without good yoga, I'm really not going to move forward, or very slowly. Equally, to balance that out with my study and my Murli, of course, Murli is the core of our Brahmin life. If I'm not actually getting my head into the Murli in a big way, then it's going to be very difficult for me to adjust with others, especially with Brahmins. As Baba said, all our karmas with Brahmins, not with lucky people, and we're surrounded by one another. I live in the Oxford Centre, and I've got 21 lovely brides with me there that I'm married to. Lots of challenges and opportunities to grow. And so, you know, within that sense, if we don't have the understanding of, you know, this soul's doing that, why is that soul? How many times have we asked, why is that soul? They're a senior instrument, and why are they behaving like that? It shows that we haven't implemented the knowledge deep enough. We haven't understood what's going on behind the scenes. This is why we have to really see the whole picture. And this is a really integral part of balance, seeing the whole picture, seeing everything that's going on. Being in the position that Bubba's in. Bubba's looking up there and he's smiling and thinking, oh, and they did that last cycle, and eventually they'll do that and that'll happen. I remember a very interesting situation. Traffic control. I remember many years ago hearing a very interesting little scenario. Bubba giving a personal message to a soul who subsequently left Gyan. And I remember listening to the message after he'd left and looking at it from two sides. The side that, in fact, the soul was in front of Baba, being given the message, and subsequently the soul had gone. And Baba, in his unlimited way, had given the soul a blessing, but he'd also acknowledged that the soul was not going to maintain his Brahmin life. And it wasn't done in a way that you would have been able to know that. Do you understand what I mean? Without hindsight, without actually knowing the situation afterwards. And it was fascinating. It was just put away in such a way that Baba already knew this soul was going to leave when he was in front of him. And he said so, but nobody would have realized at the time. And so in a sense, you know, to go so far beyond that we're seeing everything quite clearly as it is, and accepting it as it is, in that sense, is also important. Because things will happen in our Brahmin lives, and we have to let go of it very quickly. This is also a point of balance. We have to recover. You know, Baba says, and it's a boxing match, you get knocked down and you have to pick yourself up again. And this is the same situation. We have to pick ourselves up quickly and get back into the ring and continue, because otherwise this journey is very difficult. So the Murli is, as I said, an absolute essential ingredient of creating our Brahmin life. And then, of course, if I'm actually doing something with it, with the balance of yoga, then what's happening is that I'm creating my dana, which means I'm actually becoming the thing that I'm inculcating. In the same way that when we take in food, we digest it and the body is created physically, in the same way, whatever we're taking in spiritually is becoming our experience, our expression, our manifestation, our awareness. And so that it really we can see quite clearly if we're not doing this, because there'll be a discrepancy. There'll be an imbalance again. I'll be sitting in Baba's Murli and I'll be, every student might sure at me taking my notes. And then next minute I'm in an argy-bargy with somebody, or I'm, you know, not doing something that I should be doing. There's an imbalance. It's not been inculcated, implemented in my life. Because even when I'm being creative and everything, creation has to be implemented, has to be turned into a resource. Another thing that I found very useful in the recent years is that being a creative person, what I do is, oh great, that's what a great idea, put it down and do it. But I don't follow it through. Because in a lot of cases I think, oh God, that's hard work. It means I have to commit myself to this, this and this. But I've found that if I really work with the energy of creativity in the moment and I implement it immediately, then there's a power there also. And it's the same thing, you know, I'm sitting there in Baba's Murli and I think, well, that's a lovely point, I like that point that Baba said, I could really use that. You know, I'll try that in a few weeks, forget it, it won't happen. I've got to take it now and say, right, let's play with this today. Let's play with this today and see, maybe it's a real challenge for me, I've got to do something that's totally against my sanskars at the moment. You know, I'm not sweet, I'm a bit growly, you know, bit of a tiger. And Baba's saying, be very sweet today. And I'm going to go around with this sort of smile on my face, you know. Just a sort of half sneer. But at least I've made an attempt. I've started a process. It started to become my dharma. And after a while, I'm smiling, like, you know, quite normally. And we see people changing because they are making effort. So my dharma is a reflection of my yoga and my study. And then what is service? You know, another thing, we got a complete misconception of service. To us, service means rushing around like a lunatic. You know, hours on the computer, sending out banners and leaflets and trying to get around as many towns as we can in very little time in between our work. You know, come back from work, you're exhausted. I remember when I was in the centre, which was another interesting little story, how Baba captured me. Because I was still sort of toying with the idea whether this life was really for me. But the instrument that was running the centre said to me one day, he said, oh, I'm going now. I said, oh, yeah, where are you going? He said, well, I'm going somewhere else, to another town. I said, well, you can't go to another town, you're the instrument here. Who's going to run the centre? He said, oh, you can run it. I said, what do you mean I can run it? I've only been 18 months with Baba. And he said, oh, no, Baba will look after you. And I thought, oh, God, what's going on here? And so suddenly the centre was dumped on me with about 3 students. And because of my sense of responsibility, I was stuck. That's how Baba captured me. He hasn't let me go since. But in the same way, you know, as when we're doing service, I remember thinking of the same thing, you know, I must do plenty of service. I've got souls in all the time. And I remember one particular time, I got up for Amrit Vela, finished Amrit Vela, and I had to go and do some deliveries in the north of England. It was like a couple hundred miles away. So I got in the van and drove off right to the north of England, charged round there, and I got back at about 6 in the evening. So I'd been out since 5 in the morning, got back, rushed upstairs and got a shower, belted downstairs, cooked some Brahma Bhojan, you know, zapped into my whites, shot into Baba's room, shut out again, sat down, and the students arrived, and we sat there, and I was absolutely shattered. And I was sort of there giving meditation commentary, and I was going, oh, Baba said, you know, and I was off, and I thought, really, if this is service, I can do without it. And so it really is, you know, service, real service is serving through our stage. Is people seeing within us something that's attractive. Because ultimately this is how we will serve totally, through our stage, through our consciousness. You won't be giving the course to people, you won't be giving exhibitions and running around the country. We'll have to be completely stable in remembrance of Baba, and Baba then can use us like an instrument. And I'm sure many of you have had this experience of Baba using you as an instrument in service. It's a wonderful experience. I remember a classic case. I was asked to give a talk for quite a wealthy BK in the UK, and he's got lots of very wealthy friends, doctors and business people and everything. They all turned up in their Ferraris and Jags and Rollers and what have you and sat there. And the topic I had to talk about was the cycle. And I thought, oh my God, you know, these people are going to slaughter me. You know, they're all sitting there looking at me like this, you know, like sort of lion's den. And I went into Bubba's room and I thought, sort of churned through what I was going to say, and I came back and sat there. There were 60 of them there in his living room. He had quite a palatial pad. And so I was thinking, well, okay, let's begin the talk. And it's almost like I felt, you know, somebody was taken over here. And then this talk came out of my mouth. And to be honest with you, really honest with you, it wasn't me. It wasn't anything that I would have said. I was thinking, that's fantastic. Who said that? I would have never have thought of that. And it kept on going. And then these people were nodding like this and looking really interested. And then the voice said, have you got any questions? And I thought, no, not questions, please. And he said, don't worry. And then he started to ask questions. And all these wonderful answers were coming out. I was thinking, it's almost as if Daddy's incarnated in me. And it was a wonderful experience of Bubba using the costume as an instrument. So just, you know, in that way, and it was so light, and afterwards I just felt nothing had happened. I really felt I was a bystander. I felt I was just sitting in a chair in the audience listening to somebody talking. It was a wonderful experience. So ultimately, at the end of the day, this is how Bubba will use us. We will be an interface between souls and Bubba. This is how we'll be revealed. So this is the practice that we should have now, to allow Bubba in, and just, you know, Drishti is such a powerful tool. To let Bubba see, let others see Bubba through our eyes, through our vibrations. This is real service, because then they'll be really interested and they'll think, there's something about you. You've heard this before, people have said, I saw that sister and there's just something about her. There's such a beautiful smile or a sparkle on her face or something, or that brother, you know, he just said something to me, and all of a sudden, you know, it's very subtle and small things that normally attract souls, because they get an experience, you see. You know, we can give souls the course over and over again. You know, I've just given 18 women the course. And we now, you know, everything's watered down, isn't it, in Brahmin life now, because souls are so weak that are coming. A lot of souls, obviously not you, because you've got here, but many souls are very weak, and so we have to water everything down for them, give it to them in, you know, baby feed them, spoon feed them, so they can digest it in little bits. So the course is sort of spread out. Well, it is at Oxford now. And they come in big groups. We have groups up to 30 for just the meditation course in one group. But bit by bit, they sort of slip away. And it's just interesting, you know, they're not able to retain that knowledge, that experience. They just don't have the strength. And anyway, I got through these 18 souls and they sort of whittled down, you know, down to the end. And we had lots of wonderful experiences that they shared. But then I hit them with celibacy and they were out the door like a rocket. So it really shows that there's something, it has to be something else, you know. You know, that it has to be something else. We have to have real power to draw souls to Bubba. And to do that, the balance is in our Brahmin life. We have to let go of this Matthew person. You know, he has to get out of the way. Because Bubba can't do his work as long as Matthew's sitting there wanting something out of the situation. Really, this is real surrender. And then I can really enjoy my Brahmin life because I'm not doing anything. But I'm getting wonderful fruits, getting wonderful experiences because Bubba's using me now. I'm available. You know, I'm available, I'm an instrument, he can play me in the orchestra. And so this practice is practice we should be doing now. It's something we should start to play with, you know, connecting with Bubba, letting Bubba come through and using Bubba more and more in my life. And then my dana becomes my service. In a very natural way, I'm serving souls very naturally. I'm not trying to convert them, you know, I'm not a Jehovah's Witness. Don't put my foot in the door and say, hang on a minute, I'm from the Brahma Kumaris, I want to give you some knowledge. You know, it's not that kind of approach here. But we do it, don't we? It's the evangelical sort of, it must be an old Bhakti Sanskar, you know. You know, the thing about conversion. I think many of us were Christians previously, and we want to convert people. You know, it's not a matter of converting people. You know, really, Baba is everyone's father, and everyone will come to Baba. Like he said in the other day in the Murli, it's a variety tree. There's a huge variety of different souls. And so our job is just to connect people back to God again. But if I'm in the way, you know, if I'm in standing there blocking Baba, then how are they going to connect with him? So the balance is essential in my life, that I'm starting to put into place the ingredients that are allowing me to walk that tightrope. And so my service happens very naturally. And the specialities that Baba's given me in my Lokic life also become my Brahmin specialities. You know, when I first came to Baba, I'm a musician, not a professional musician, but I enjoy music. And I was very attached to it, you know, lots of toys to play with. And music's a very emotional and pulling sanskar. Some of you most likely know, still got your music in the background. And so I said, okay, look, this is something that's pulling my intellect away from Baba, so let's put it on one side for a year or two, see how I feel about that. And I did, I put it on one side. But then I started to re-examine it. I thought, look, in actual fact, this is a speciality I've been given. It's something that can be used in Baba's service also. So, you know, it's just a matter of me not being attached to it and using it in a different way. And so I started to bring it back into my Brahmin life in ways that it wasn't infringing or impinging on my spiritual life, but it was embellishing it. It was part of that balance. That I'm doing something that I enjoy doing, that I'm good at, but I'm doing it for Baba now, not for myself. And you really have to be very clear about yourself in this process, because a lot of my life certainly has been on the stage. You know, I do entertaining, I do the entertaining at Oxford, and I've been an entertainer most of my life in different ways, and so I find myself on the stage. And you take a lot from that situation sometimes, acting or music or whatever, you draw power from it. And it is a very powerful experience, there's a lot of adrenaline comes from it. And you know, you have to really be aware of what's going on in these dynamics, because we still take that energy from other souls through what we do and what we are. We're trying to draw. And so now it's most important that we don't draw from that source, that we become a conduit to give. It's a reversal of the process. And I take from Baba now and not from souls, and that I give. And so as I work through that, and then the balance is created, and at the end of the day, what we find that once the balance, the perfect balance is there and I'm aligned, that is my stage of perfection, and then I will become an angel. An angel is transparent, everything is absolutely clear within that angel. The stability is absolutely spot on. There's not an ounce of fluctuation. There's nothing hiding in me, because I've cleared it out, I've dealt with it, and I've just become that instrument to be used. I'll stop there for a moment, because you may have some questions or something that you'd like to ask me that I can't guarantee I can answer it, but I can attempt to. Has anybody got anything they'd like to throw? Or you might have a comment you might like to make. That I understand, of course, that this subject is unlimited. I've only touched on certain things, and most of them are just my experiences that I thought you might be interested in hearing, rather than me preaching to you about something. But of course, Baba's mentioned in the Murli many, many, many different aspects of balance. And there's some beautiful points on that. And actually, in fact, I was trying to put some together this morning. And if I get some time, I'll put together a sheet and I'll leave it somewhere and people can photocopy it. All the points on balance that's come from the last 5 years' Murlis. But I'll make some announcement if that's possible. Have you got anything you'd like to say? Anybody's got some burning question about balance? Or is it as clear as mud? The question is how, being on the stage or being in front, how are you able to give rather than to take? And, you know, it's interesting seeing the daddies in this process, because they're always on the stage, aren't they? They're always available. And I think, you know, that it's not that we're not taking, in a sense. We're taking blessings. I don't think it's a matter of not actually taking from the situation we find ourselves in, because we are receiving others' blessings just naturally from the very work we do. The problem is, I think, in most cases, is that maybe the buck stops with me. It's not, you know, rather than it's Bubba that I'm trying to draw the attention to. I always find this a very interesting challenge. How do the, because we always see the daddies, don't we? But do we see Bubba? I mean, when we see Daddy Gulzar, of course, we see Bubba, don't we? Because she's Bubba's instrument. So there's a natural association there. It was interesting, I just did a slideshow recently where I explored the possibility of non-association. Because everything has a point of association. You know, whether it's a word, an object, or anything, the moment we see it, it creates a point of association in our consciousness. So I did a slideshow with absolutely, with intangible shapes. And I tested out it on a group of people doing a talk to see what their responses would be. And it was very interesting. They reacted in many different ways. And I asked them why they reacted, and they didn't know. Because there was nothing there that was a tangible object that they could say, it's that, or it's this, because it's a shape or a colour. And so we respond very differently. And so in the same way, you know, when we're looking at something, we're looking at a daddy, there's a point of association there. And some feeling comes, that obviously the thought comes and the feeling's created. And yet Bubba says, you know, don't draw souls' attentions to yourself, draw them to Bubba. Because ultimately, and this is a very interesting concept, you know, that the reality is of the situation is that we will only get what we want from Bubba. You know, it's a very deep point. We think, you know, oh, it's our friend, our companion over there, that sister's my friend, or this person. But yes, they are, but I won't get what I want from them. Do you understand what I mean? What I'm really looking for, what the soul really desires, will only be achieved from having a connection with Bubba. Because Bubba provides that for the soul. That's why Bubba always says he's just one Bubba. And yet we often downgrade our remembrance to human beings, and we are subtly drawing their attention, if not grossly, because we want to be loved, we want to be accepted, we want to be acknowledged. And so it's a subtle thing, isn't it? You know, I'm over here, you know, I make a bit of noise. I'm here at the back, can you see me? You know, trying to draw the attention. And even if we don't do it grossly, we can do it subtly. And yet to be somebody who sits there and is what they are, but at the same time is not creating an attraction, is a big challenge. Equally, you know, to take souls' blessings, but equally when souls go out of the room, you know, if you've enjoyed what I've shared with you today, to realize that what I've shared with you today is what Bubba's given me. Do you know what I mean? Okay, I've churned it and I've processed it and I've shared it with you, but it's what Bubba's given me. So not to connect with me and think, oh, Matthew said that and he said this, that was great, etc. But realize that the source of that is from God. I got it from Bubba. And I've just played with it and shared it with you. And so that's a different thing. Because, you know, we have a natural tendency, a natural bhakti sanskar, to be subservient to people. You see it even in Gyan. Somebody turns up, the daddy turns up. And yeah, there's a lot of love for everybody, but some people, they never go to anything except when daddy's there. No, it's a reality. You know, daddy's there, and then suddenly hordes of people appear from everywhere in white that you've never even seen in your life before. I mean, where do they come from? And they say, I'm a Brahmin. I remember going down Shanti Van many years ago. It was very funny. I was down there. And this soul comes up to me, an Indian soul. He says, hello, brother, where are you from? I said, I'm from the UK. He says, I'm Bubba's child. I've been Bubba's child now for 18 years. I said, that's fantastic. He said, this is my daughter, she is 3, and this is my son, he is 4. I said, oh yeah, you're Bubba's child. I am Bubba's child. You know, it's sort of like, but very, you know, it's wonderful. But I think, you know, it is a tricky area. And I think really it's a good question to ask the daddies, because they're constantly living in that situation where there's a daddy and everyone zooms in like bees to the honeypot, because daddies are very attractive. They're the closest thing we have in a physical form to Bubba, and so they draw us very easily. But the thing is, you know, are we remembering Bubba when we're seeing the daddies? That's the thing. And maybe we are, and maybe we're not, you know, because the bhakti thing is, oh, daddies, you know, put them on that thing, also on that pedestal. One more question? Burning question, don't be shy. Yes? In what way in particular? Oh, my own techniques. Yeah, I've used a number of different practices. In the early days, I used to take specific areas of Bubba's, Murli's in my study. You know, I might, for example, I created a Shrimat book. I just go through and took out all the Shrimat and played with that. I work with, what I normally do is I'm fortunate enough to have a Murli every day and I highlight things in different colours. And the highlights represent certain aspects of what Bubba's saying. Bubba, in fact, I sometimes do a course on this, well, not a course, but a sort of lecture on it. And if you're interested, we could arrange something at some point for a couple of hours to show you different study techniques of the Murli. If you're interested, you know, you can see me afterwards and we can arrange a time. And the things that I've used as techniques to make the Murli interesting. But in this particular system, I colour in different things. And, you know, there are many different aspects in Bubba's Murli. Bubba's dealing constantly with right and left-hand brain scenarios. It's taking us from image to intellectual ideas, backwards and forwards. So he's therefore balancing up the consciousness and the awareness. And we can home in on certain things and see how Bubba's working, creating in different ways things like mind maps, different concepts. When you're working with what I call visuals, like Ravan's claw, you know, you might be somebody who's very visually orientated, and Ravan's claw, you know, see this big claw with blood on it, like they did in the early days, horrible claw, you know, it's very sort of gross, but it immediately sort of impacts on you. Or it might be something more subtle, it might be a concept or an idea. So I gather all these things together and play with them, put them into different formats. For example, in my musical side, I gathered together many of Bubba's words from the Murlis, and I put it together in two songs. And you all heard of Bliss. Well, when Bliss first started their recording career as Brahmins, they had very little material, and I wrote songs. And so two of my songs actually went onto their first LP, which was True Heart and Dance Away, which are all Gyani words actually lifted out of the Murli, and I turned them into songs. And so, you know, you can work in different ways, things that are exciting and interesting for your poetry or whatever stimulates you, but it keeps you connected to Bubba's knowledge in a way that you really feel excited about playing with it. You can write things, poetry or whatever. And there's many different things. It's limitless as long as you are remaining absorbed in it. So study becomes really exciting, something you really look forward to, something you really want to do. And your awareness is being empowered with the ideas. And you're feeling creative and you're feeling excited about Bubba's and about Brahmin life. And that really is, you know, important. If you can't sustain that, then Brahmin life does start to become a little dull and boring after a while. I know it's the Murli again. Bubba said the same thing again. Be soul consciousness. He says it every day. You know it. Yes. How do I differentiate between my thoughts and Bubba's thoughts? What, in sense of my meditation or? Oh, I see. When I'm giving a talk and whether Bubba's talking, well, for me, it's, I suppose in that particular... Yeah, in that particular situation, I think the one that I shared with you, I think the main thing that struck me was that it just was not my train of thinking. I'm not saying it wasn't me that was saying it, but you know, you get to know yourself reasonably well and how you think and perceive and play with ideas and what you do understand, although of course we have our subconscious and we don't know what comes out of the subconscious. But when, in a sense, something that is totally different to you emerges, you know, from yourself, because Bubba does use us. You know, Bubba's said this many times, he'll use anybody any time. He'll even use a Lokic person, doesn't have to be a Brahmin. If you feel someone needs to be touched, you know, he said this in the Murli, if someone's a student sitting there and you're trying to give them a course and you're not doing much of a job of it, he'll enter you and give them the course if he feels that they're more important than you are at that time. And so Bubba does use us. You know, the most important thing is not to get sort of, as Bubba says, is not to think that I did it at that time. You know, that, oh yeah, that was a great course that I gave, you know, and Bubba's done it, you know, oh, I'm just an amazing soul. We are amazing souls, but humility is a really powerful armor. You know, you'll get lots of acclaim and praise as Brahmins, and we will do, as we become exposed to the world and the souls of the world see what beautiful souls are in Brahmins, in the Brahmin family. They're going to be very attracted to you. Are you ready for that? You know, are you ready for that? To be ready to, you know, souls are drawn to you. Are you ready to deal with that acclaim? Because you may never experienced it before. For me, I've had that kind of experience just in my Lokic life. So I know what the feelings are of that. And you know, and it's, for me, it's I have to try to establish and play with very powerfully, and not always successfully, humility. I have to really let go. It's, as Bubba says, it's Bubba's doing it. It's Bubba's work, Bubba's life, Bubba's family, Bubba's this. You know, the Madam Amos is here. You go along to one of the departments, and they fix your kurtas or your sari for you, and you say, "Thank you very much, brother." And they say, "No, thank you, thank you, Baba." You know what I mean? They say this all the time, because it's a consciousness. You know, Baba's doing, and it might sound strange to us. No, I'm doing it. But no, if I start to maintain the consciousness that Baba's doing, then I'm automatically putting in my own disclaimer. I'm growing and I'm learning. And like the daddies say, they're sitting there in the Murli. How many times have the daddies heard those Murlis? But they still sit there, and they sit there as students, still excited and interested by the Murli. And so it's really important that our consciousness is right. Same thing, you know, balance, child and master. Any situation, I'm in the center or with other souls, I'm putting my ideas forward, I'm being very strong about them, I'm the master, okay? But the moment that the decision is reached and it's not in my favor, don't continue pushing as the master. Yeah, I want my thing done, I want my idea to be taken on. I'm now the child, fair enough. I have to go along with it. It might not be even the right idea, but we have to live with those things. This is all about balance also. So it's the same thing. It's not to even think, you know, that Baba's using me all the time, because I might be doing something that's certainly not Baba's work. It might be completely opposite. And I'm saying, "Oh, Baba's doing this." And it's quite obvious that Baba's not doing it. Yet, you know, I've got myself a misconception. I remember a sister here many years ago who sat up on the stage and gave talks in the early days. And she says, "Hang on a second. Hang on, Baba's saying something to me now. Wait, hold on, don't start laughing. Ah, yes, Baba's just told me." And she would go on like this, and alarm bells started to ring in my head. I was looking at her and I was thinking, don't like this. You know, the alarm bell started to go off, because that's not the way that instruments work. That's a problem. Do you understand what I mean? There's a very big difference. And to be clear about these things, we have to have discrimination. And to have discrimination, we have to have understanding and knowledge, and also to be absolutely open and receptive to things that are coming either from Baba or from the seniors, because the seniors will give us clarity. You know, I will be an instrument, all of us will be instruments. We have been and we will be. And the ultimate goal is that we will become total instruments. That means Baba will use us continuously, all the time. But that's a stage that we have to develop, where my humility is total. There's no feeling any longer that Matthew is doing anything. And it will be absolutely apparent that he isn't. His personality will be merged in that sense. He will be enjoying the fruits and the experience of Baba, but Baba will be doing. And Baba will be clearly emerged in this soul, as he will be in you. And that's the preparation we have to do. Dismantling the ego, dismantling the Buddhi consciousness, dismantling this persona. So that just Baba is there, and that's what our final goal is. Clear as mud. Okay. Have a moment of meditation and then lunch. Thank you very much.